All right, well, let's get started. And Brian, I really appreciate you taking some time today to talk with me. Brian Batson here is my guest today, and he's a successful real estate investor in single-family properties. And I'm really looking forward to learning, Brian, what your story is and why you're doing investing and how you've been successful at it, and looking forward to hearing any advice that you have for the people that are watching. So let's go ahead and get started. And I guess the first question to help us get started here is, how long ago did you start investing in single-family properties?
Well, when I started, when I considered investing, I would say probably about 5 years ago. And then I stumbled upon a group that provided the education and mentoring about 4 years ago, and I bought my first property about 3 years ago.
Okay, so you were about 2 years, once you had decided it was something you wanted to do, it took about 2 years before you actually purchased your first property?
Yeah. I started looking for property just several months after I got really interested in it. I really did not know what to do. It was something that was very foreign to me. I had some decent knowledge about it, but I didn't know where I could be making a mistake, and so that kept me from buying property. And plus, too, like many people, I started off with no money and no credit, and I was in college at the time, so I didn't have that capability.
So that's going to be really interesting, I think, to understand, you know, how do you get started with no money, no credit? How were you able to do that? Because I know a lot of people have that concern. Can I even do this if I don't have money and don't have credit?
You can. But what I think the trick is, for me, it was some fundamental issues, fundamentals of finance. Money management. I didn't have those skills yet. I had a kindergartner's level knowledge of money management. I had to cultivate that. I had to understand exactly where I was financially, and not just in my own head, but I had to actually write it down. I had to see where my income was coming from, which was pretty easy because I had a job at the time.
Right.
But I had to see where my money was going, so I had to start keeping track of that. And I don't know if it was from family or not, but money was one of those taboo subject. And so I was never really taught how to handle money properly. I knew, you know, different family members made money, but, you know, they always seemed to be living paycheck to paycheck, and I couldn't figure out why. But I took on those same bad habits, and I had to quickly take a look at myself, take a look at what I've been doing, and then from there, once I had a clear shot on black and white on paper, I was able to get a hold of that and start turning that ship around.
Okay, so turning that ship around, so you went from not really having control of your money situation necessarily. You did have income, but once you got that control and managed it, you could see where you're at. Were you able at that point then to start doing what you could financially to prepare for investing? Was that your purpose?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I joined a group about 4 years ago. Went to their seminar, and I realized that there was so much I did not know. At first, it got me depressed. There's a lot of fear in there, and it's like, poor me, I can't do this. And then finally, after I got over my, depression or whatnot, that I finally, like, okay, I can do this, but it's going to take me a lot of hard work,
right.
A lot of reflection. And once I did that, I started to able to save more money than I was actually bringing in, and fix some of my credit. And that's why it took me about a year to buy my first property. I bought it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And the properties I bought since then have been with partners and using other people's money. But before I did that, I needed to know how to handle my own money before I started taking on other people's money.
Right.
And then also how to manage money on a smaller scale before I started managing money on a lot larger scale. And I see that as I start getting to bigger investments, start handling bigger portfolios, that I need to have that foundation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned that you were about for a year there, once you saw, wow, this is something I want to do, but then you didn't feel like you really could do it. You had some fear, feeling a little discouraged. What was it that enabled you to get over that fear and that discouragement?
Okay, as far as getting over fear, I had read Think and Grow Rich, and it talks about you're the average of the five people you hang around with the most. Now, I have a lot of friends, but as far as business, I started taking advice from people who were successful, who are doing what they said or what they teach, and that helped me push me over the edge to buy my first property. I kind of stopped listening so much to some of my family members, even though they love me and everything. None of them had have never really had any investments, true investments, or never had any really, a successful business. So I started finding people who had what I wanted. And that really, really helped push me over the edge. And, I developed a relationship with them, and it wasn't like a give-take type of relationship. I always see what I can do to help them out in any way, shape, or form I can, and developed a good relationship. And so that really, really pushed me over the edge. And I have people I can talk to. I have a network now that I can bounce things off of. Uh-huh. I definitely believe in the abundance mentality, helping people out. That's really what it would help me get over my fear. And also too, I'm big in psychology and stuff like that. It's just being okay with yourself. Once you're okay with yourself, you can start doing things that at first seem really risky, because everything's wrapped up in that one little thing you're doing, but then you realize that you'll be okay no matter what you do. You're able to look at things more clearly and to take risks, because you're not so much, I don't know, not so much worried about the outcome, where you do have goals, but you know that you'll be okay. You have a network that'll help you out.
Right. So surrounding yourself with people that had accomplished what you wanted to accomplish, people that could help you do that, inspire you, give you confidence, that was really the primary way that you overcame that fear?
Yes, definitely surround myself with like-minded people.
Okay. So do you remember when you bought your first house, what kind of feelings you had as you were going to write out the check and actually put the money down?
Man, my heart was beating fast. I have never, when I started with that group, which is Lifestyles Unlimited, when I started with them, I had $2,500 in a 580 credit score. Saved up some money. I saved about 10 grand. And so whenever I was coming to get that first property, I had to write a check for, I think it was around $8,500. And I'm just like, I was sweating bullets. Oh man, it's just thinking about giving that money up and, just putting that on the line. It was a lot, man, that first property, I tell people when it comes to investing, first property is going to be your hardest property because there's a lot of fear, a lot of insecurity that comes up. And it was a lot of insecurities coming up, financial insecurity. Am I good enough? Can I do this? That pit at the bottom of your stomach, just about thinking about possibly losing that money. And then also, whenever I was having contractors do work, I was sitting there juggling money. I actually had just a little bit of money in my IRA, and while I was going to get money back from what we call a draw in hard money, I still need to pay my foundation guy, and I wanted to pay him on time. I wanted to pay him quickly. And so I had to pull money out of my IRA to pay him so that in the next week I'd get my draw to pay back the IRA. And I was sitting there juggling money. It was just, man, it was quite the experience.
I bet. Pretty intense.
Yeah, it was. It was. And so, you know, whenever you still, I only had like $1,000 in the bank account, $2,000 in the bank account to kind of, that was the amount of wherewithal I had. Not very much.
Not much. But you pulled through and you got the deal. You bought the house. Mm-hmm. It needed some work. You mentioned you had a foundation guy, so it must have needed some foundation work.
Yeah,
which scares a lot of people if they hear there's a foundation problem. They, you know, they're like, "Oh, that may be something I can't handle." And yet, you took that on in your first property.
Yeah. Actually, I bit off a lot that first property. We replaced a roof, replaced a condenser outside, foundation, these are all big things. So it ended up being quite a bit.
Yeah. So when it was all said and done, you got the house fixed. Yeah. You got it ready to rent out, to lease, and so what was the result of all of that?
The result was I got about $200 in cash flow. All the money that I
per month,
in,
right?
Yeah, a month. All the money that I put in initially, I got back, and at the time, 3 years ago, you still were able to do what you call a cash out refi. So I was able to not only pull that money out, I pulled out an additional $8,700.
Above and beyond what you had put into the house?
Yeah, so I have absolutely no money in the property anymore. And it's probably approximately about $23,000 in equity in the property.
Wow.
So I went from $2,500 to a net worth of, you know, over $30,000 in 1 year.
So just doing quick math, I mean, that's hundreds of percent, you know.
Yeah.
Increase in your net worth just by that one transaction.
And I took a pay cut. I took a pay cut from the job I was working at, you know, when I first started, you know, after doing the 2-day seminar, and then from when I bought the property, it was two different jobs, and I had taken like around $7,000 pay cut, $8,000 pay cut.
Wow. So some people are going to hear that and say, well, $200 a month cash flow, I mean, that's not going to change my life. So did that make any difference to you?
One thing, the feeling when you get that first rent check, you know, you see it. And I was charging my renter, who's been there for the past 3 years, by the way. He pays me every month. He pays me on time now. But it's to see $850 just come in, you know, that check is just, man, that was just the coolest feeling, depositing that money and then only having to, you know, expense whatever it was, $650.
For your mortgage and your insurance.
Insurance and taxes. So that is just, I mean, that was the coolest feeling. And yeah, $200, I mean, it doesn't seem like much. But then when you start accumulating more and more property, all that adds up. And, you know, the $200, that was back in, you know, that was my first property. I know what to look for, you know, even better now. So I average approximately $500 per month per property.
Per property.
Yeah, so that starts to get a lot bigger, you know, income.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Well, so if you've been able to improve that as you've gotten more experience in doing this, can I ask how much cash flow you're getting from all your – how many properties do you have and what's your average cash flow per month?
Okay. Well, as far as the amount of properties I have right now, I have five. And five properties, but I cash flow about $2,700 a month. That's tax-free. And for me, that's more than I need to live off of. And what it's done is allowed me, it's freed me up. You know, I'm not required to work at a corporate job anymore. So I can do what I want to. It's allowed me to start, you know, some businesses, you know, online where I couldn't have done that before. It's allowed me to go on, you know, trips to Bali, you know, 2 week long, 3 week long trips to maybe like Colorado, stuff like that. You know, with the cash flow I have now, and it's also also allowed me to get into some bigger avenues, which I'm exploring right now.
Awesome. That's great. So just to kind of recap, if what I hear you saying is that first house with $200 a month cash flow in and of itself may not have been a large amount of money, but it was so exciting to get that, to see that money coming in, and then you built on that till now you've got five properties, almost $3,000 a month income, and that's passive income, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to work every day all day long to get that money. So your time is free.
No, you know, in real estate, especially single family, is not difficult. It doesn't take a lot of time at all. You know, when it comes to contracting, work, maintenance, stuff like that, I outsource all that. You know, when it comes to acquiring properties, I have other people who look for the properties for me. I do the analysis, though. But they look for the properties for me. They send them, so I'm not sitting there scouring the internet, driving all over the place looking for stuff. I've just built connections through just different get-togethers, you know, even going out at night, you know, I'll develop connections like that, and that's how properties will be sent to me. It does not take very much time at all. It's just a matter of doing it the right way, the smart way, and having someone to talk to that's been there and done that. As far as when people ask me how much time I spend on real estate a month, I would say approximately 30 minutes.
A month?
A month.
And that's with five houses, right?
Yes.
Wow, that's great.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to cut this part out of the video. I had a question in my mind, and it just stole me.
That'll come up.
Maybe I'll leave it in. It'll make me look human, right?
Yeah.
So I know that is one of the concerns that people have when they're looking at doing this, is thinking, well, I've got a full-time job. Mm-hmm. How can I get started and do this when I'm working and, you know, and that sort of thing. So what is it that you do, Brian, in order to spend so very little time working on this stuff and yet generate such great income?
Well, let me rephrase something before. When it comes to acquiring a property, okay, let's just say someone sends me some properties. Maybe I'll book in about, I allocate maybe 30 minutes in the morning. Okay, this is during acquisition phase. Okay. About 30 minutes in the morning or something like that, you know, to analyze properties that are being sent to me. If I find one, then I tell the realtor or wholesaler or whoever it was that sent it to me to send me a contract for the property. I want to make a bid. And that's it. And I just chill out until I get word back. And I would say most of your time is put up front. It's just a matter of allocating your time, maybe in the morning or in the evening, to take care of this kind of stuff. And then once you have a renter in the property, and you know, the process that I use, once I have a renter in the property, I hardly ever hear from that person. And so whenever I say 30 minutes per month, there might be months where I don't do anything. To be honest with you, real estate can be kind of boring. And so, you know, most of my time is me up front, acquiring the property, you know, putting the tenant in there, and then maybe taking care of some odds and ends the first week they're in there. But again, I don't lift a hammer. I don't, you know, I don't solve.
You get other people to go in there and do that work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So do you figure those costs in when you're going through the acquisition process? Factoring in, I'm going to have other people do this work, not do it myself.
Exactly. No, I treat it like a business. I don't want to create myself another job. You know, I want to have a scalable business. And so it's the more of me that's in the business, there is, the less I can grow. So I want to try to keep me as much out of it as possible. I will make some, you know, certain decisions, and evaluate certain things, but I have other people do the work for me.
I see. So your time is more allocated when you're purchasing a property, going through the rehab and stuff. That's where you're spending time, mm-hmm. and you're just more systematic about that. But once you get a tenant into the property, I think you mentioned that there's really not a whole lot left to do. Is that correct?
Correct. See, for me, I acquired a property. I'm refinancing right now. It's a fifth property, refinancing. It already had a tenant in there. You know, I spent like $300 doing some brick work, and that's it. And it's cash flowing $400 a month, and it has around $30,000 in equity for about $6,000 down. So where was I getting with that?
How much time you spend you have a tenant?
Yeah, the property I had before that, the one I bought before that, was about 9 months before that. So actually, it's about a year before that. So I just collect checks now from those guys. I have one property. I'm trying to give you instances of, you know, the time I spend.
Right.
I have one property that my tenant called me up and he wants to buy it. And so I run my comps, which, you know, takes very little time, and I gave him a price. And then he asked me about the foundation. You know, there's someone selling the foundation. You know, he wants to know what it would cost to fix it. So I'm like, okay. I called up a list of contractors, three of them, and I told them to go out there and check it out. Here's my tenant's phone number. He'll open the door for you so you can do your thing. And so they get back with me with the bids, and now it's time for me to look over those bids, which won't take very long.
Right.
And I'll give whoever the go-ahead to fix the foundation. You know, so that's, I mean, it's very little time.
I see.
Make a couple phone calls, get people squared away, get them on task, and that's about it. But that time between I bought this last property I have, I'm refinancing, and the time before, I mean, there was no acquisition. There was no having to put, you know, do rehab or put tenants in there. So I really wasn't doing anything as far as real estate. What I was doing was starting to learn and research about another business that I've been wanting to start. And so I've been able to focus my time on that.
Right.
While the real estate just runs itself.
I see. And I think that's a goal that many of us have, is we want to get to that point where the real estate runs itself so we mm-hmm. can do other things that we want to be doing.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So is there anything special about you, Brian, that has enabled you to be successful at real estate investing that maybe the average person wouldn't be able to do? Or how do you see yourself in that way?
I'm really stubborn and hard-headed. it's just a willingness to try new things and to listen to other people. That's probably the biggest thing. I've been willing to take risks, and through those risks, I've won some, I've lost some, I've learned from those experiences, and that's really what it's just. I think that's basically for me. That's it. You know, I think I have above average intelligence. You know, through the risk I've taken, I've learned to be more of a B personality. I learned how to analyze things.
A B personality meaning more analytical.
More analytical. Where I was this, you know, ready fire aim, you know, type person.
Right.
You lose a couple of dollars off of that, and you learn how to.
Kind of settle down a little bit.
Settle down, so
calculate, analyze.
Yeah, yeah, and I bounced all the way to the opposite side, and so I got paralyzed there for a little bit. But now I learned how to analyze what's truly necessary and kind of leave out the rest, and learn how to do it as quickly and effectively as possible so that I can make decisions faster.
Right. Okay. So. You've been doing this for several years now, and I'm just wondering, what have you made any mistakes, and can you cite a mistake that you've made that you would do differently?
Yeah, I've made plenty of mistakes. So, for instance, my first property, I was trying to skimp a little bit on the rehab, and one of the things was plumbing, and also the condenser unit outside. I thought it could, you know, last a little bit longer. I wanted to kind of push it a little bit instead of fixing it right up front before I got a tenant in there. And what do you know?
It went out.
Air condition went out, you know, the first sign of, you know, a little bit of heat outside, and then the plumbing, it sprung a leak. So all that, you know, I had to fix anyway. So next time, for me, you know, I try to get everything I can fixed up front. Anything that can go wrong during the term of lease with the property, I get it fixed up front so that I won't have to be dealing with that when the tenant is in the property.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned that you have partners that you're working with now. Mm-hmm. So what advice could you give people based on your experience? How do you partner up with somebody that and do it in a way that makes it work?
Okay. What I tell people with about partnerships, any kind of partnership, you have to bring something to the table. You have to figure out what that is, what you bring to the table, and what you need. And you have to be able to balance that out. No one's just going to give you $100,000 or $150,000. You have to have exhibit something of value for them to do that. And so what I recommend people do is to make a list of their assets, not just money or credit or anything like that, but what resources as far as time, knowledge, experience, what can you bring to the table? Be able to write that down. Be able to have a resume. If you've done properties before, be able to show the returns. Have honest returns on there. So that, because you're going to have to sell that to someone else. And also in partnerships, you got to realize when you're partnered up with someone, you're married to them, essentially. So you have to weigh that as well. Is this someone that I actually want to work with for the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, potentially? Is this person going to bug the heck out of me? So you have to weigh that out, too. I have a, you know, one of my partners in real estate, so he's a really good guy. He's an older gentleman. He has knowledge in real estate. He has, you know, background in real estate. He has the money. And for me, he used my income and my credit score and my knowledge and resources, and we bought property. Now, but with him, what the great thing about him is, if I need to go out or do something, or I want to go do something, you know, like for instance, when I went to Bali last year, I was gone for 3 weeks and I turned my phone off. So
he just took care of things for you. You didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. You know, just in case anything happened. And actually I had a rehab going on at the time. And I kind of gave him the rundown of what was going on, and I left it up to him. And so I went out and not have to worry about the properties while I was going on my trip.
Right. Awesome. So can I ask how do you set up the partnership so that you both benefit? How have you set that up?
Well, for me, I did a simple for just a. Like a single family partnership, just a two person partnership. I made it real simple. What I did was actually go online, look up some partnership agreements, some simple partnership agreements. I worded it to fit our partnership. Then I had a lawyer look over it. And what I should have done at first, and what I've done since then, was actually have my CPA look over it as well.
Okay.
For tax ramifications.
Right.
So that's what I did for this single family partnership. Now, you know, if I were to take on more partners, or if I go after bigger deals, especially like in multifamily, that's all going to be lawyers. I'll have them draw that up. That's going to be a little more complicated. I like to try to keep things as simple as possible, though.
Right. Okay. So what tips do you have for somebody who's just getting started in real estate? Maybe they already know this is something they want to do. They're motivated by doing what you've done and becoming financially independent so that you don't have to work in a job. You can do what you choose. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to somebody in that position?
Repeat that question one more time. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. So what advice would you give somebody who's just starting out in real estate investing? They know they want to do it. Maybe they have some fear, concerns, not sure if they actually can do it. But just at the beginning stages of this, what advice would you give them?
Well, there's books to read. Those always help. I would definitely find a mentor. I really would find a mentor. Qualify these people. Are they people that have what you want? Are they trustworthy? What kind of feelings do you get about them? Pay attention to that. Those are people that you can start listening to. But ultimately, it's going to be your responsibility. One of the things I did was, especially when I was ramping up my real estate, I'm a big proponent of the 4-hour work week, and one of the things he talked about was, writing down the absolute worst things that could happen if you were to pursue this avenue that you're wanting to take, and what are the absolute best things, that life-changing things that will happen to you if you were to do this and it became a success. And so once I started to write all that down and really, really try to figure out what is the absolute worst thing to happen to me, how life-changing was it, could I easily get myself out of it, or be able to go back to my same, existence that I had before. And I started to realize that, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was. So it allowed me to push forward. With the knowledge I've been taking, that I've been getting from reading, from I joined, another group and was asking members questions, asking mentors questions, soaking up information like a sponge. That's definitely something that I would recommend. And then one more thing is to really get a good understanding of your financial well-being, to understand where you're at. To keep tabs of that.
Right. Okay, makes sense. So you mentioned books. You read The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferriss. Is that correct?
Yes, Timothy Ferriss, yep.
Okay. Are there any other books that you read that you could recommend?
Yeah, one of the fundamental books is, of course, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That'll definitely change your paradigm. Cash Flow Quadrant that he writes. Those are basically all the books you need to read from him because they start to say the same stuff, just packaged
different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Think and Grow Rich is a really, really good book. I was actually recommended that to somebody today. I read that about 3 or 4 times before I bought my first property. That was something that really, really helped me out. Those are probably the main books. I know Stephen Covey's pretty good with his seven habits of highly successful people.
Okay, right.
Or highly effective.
Highly effective people.
Effective. That's a good book. It was a little dry for me, but I got most of that. Okay. But my recommendations, of course, long story short, 4-Hour Work Week, Think and Grow Rich, and Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Cash Flow Quadrant.
Okay, excellent. So in your experience, how much knowledge did you have to have before you were ready to go out and start investing?
I had to have a base knowledge, which is what I learned through the group I was in. Just the basics. Where you're really going to learn is when you get out there and start applying the things that you've learned. Your experience is where you're going to learn 90% of about real estate. Just like, I tell people, it's like you didn't learn how to ride a bike in the classroom, did you?
Good,
you have to get out there and
point.
Do it. So, that's the case here. You can learn some theory and some the basics about real estate, but it's not until you get out there and go through that spectrum of emotions. And whatever issues can come up, and you have to do problem solving. That's whenever you really you really learn.
That's when it really happens and comes together.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a lot of investors that I talk to that have been successful, that they say the same thing that you're saying, is, sure, go get some level of fundamental knowledge, but you're really not going to learn what you need to learn until you just go out there and do it and recommend that. So, and in my experience, real estate is forgiving enough. And as you mentioned, too, you've made some mistakes, and yet you're still successful. Mm-hmm. So you're going to make mistakes, but it sounds to me like you don't really need to worry about that, in the sense that worrying about that you're going to lose all your money and all that, because if you have people to work with and they're showing you and helping you and you make some mistakes, it's still, you can still do it.
Mm-hmm. And one thing too, this might scare people too, but I've got to a point that, you know, through my experience and the knowledge that I have now that I've acquired, if I were to lose it all today, I'm pretty confident in myself and being able to get myself up off, you know, that, you know, up on my feet, dust it off, and be able to go at it again. It's what I have up here now that really is what's valuable.
And that's such a great place to be, because you feel confident and you have this belief that you can do it. So that, you know, I know so many people want to achieve that. And I really appreciate your time today, Brian, to talk to me and help people out that are watching this. You've done a great job in the last few years being successful at investing and becoming financially independent. And it's a great story. It's a great model for us to follow. So thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. It humbles me.
Thank you. All right. We'll talk to you later. Take care.
Okay, David.
Bye-bye.